We continue now with our chat with the dangerous Wanda Coleman, headliner at the 5th Annual Super Bowl of Poetry at the Northwest Spoken Word Lab in Auburn, Washington. The rare combination of a vibrant intellect, South Central street savvy, and a sense of poetic lineage, Wanda is perhaps the best hope for the African-American literary avant-garde and certainly one of America's most under-recognized poetic voices. You talk about the lack of an African-American avant-garde. You mentioned it in the roundtable discussion during the Super Bowl of Poetry. Can you tell us why, first of all, before we get into the lack of one from the African-American literary community, can you tell us why a literary avant-garde is important and what that means that we don't have one in America?
Well, I think an avant-garde is important because new ideas are important. They stimulate discourse. So that's really, and that's exciting to be challenged. Even if one doesn't necessarily care for what it looks like, I enjoy a challenge. And unfortunately, what has happened with African American writers, we're still too busy advocating for our full status as human beings in this country. That's still a primary issue. That's still the front burner issue. So the kind of gamesmanship, the kind of intellectual play that usually typifies or has typified in the past an avant-garde is a luxury. When people are still, when we're still having so many social problems in the greatest nation on earth, now this nation can move. You know, when you see what, you know, it's astonishing the swiftness with what President Bush could move after 9/11 happened. But yet when it comes to social programs, there's this complacency, there's this huge apathy. You know, look what happened after the bombing in Oklahoma City of the federal building. What happened after Columbine? You know, this amnesia that seems to fall like a curtain after very significant events. There's a criminalization process taking place of women and youth in this country that is astonishing. No one seems to be addressing this or looking at it or looking at the root causes of this. What is happening to America's middle class? What's happening to young white males that would cause someone like a Christopher Bishop to drive that, a 14-year-old, to drive that airplane into the Bank of America building? These are, to me, these are the issues that need to be addressed. And they're not being addressed. They're being, you know, this happy face is being stamped on what seems to me a profoundly tragic aspect of American life.
How then do you connect a literary avant-garde with bringing in new ideas and bringing in the notion of criminal, like you say, the criminalization of youth and minorities in this country?
I don't know. I don't have the answer to that, because in this country, the intellectual elite has capitulated to the corporatization of America. It has capitulated. I mean, the universities have capitulated. You know, they're using time quality management. They're using, they're getting rid of the kind of human contact that you need, the secretarial help, the things that would free an artist up to be an artist or intellectuals up to do this thinking. When you have your finest mind, your professors, you know, when your finest minds live their entire lives and die without making a tenth of what your finest athletes make, something's wrong. We have an upside-down society. When all our money goes into the most superficial, the most forgettable aspects of our society, I mean, all you need to do is get on the internet and surf. And if you look at who was considered, you know, the popular culture icons of a certain period and how ultimately trapped in time they are, how valueless they are now, how useless what they had to contribute was. Who do you turn to over time? Your philosophers, your historians, Your great thinkers are so underrated in this society. And unfortunately, a large portion of them are to the detriment of our country. I think they're considered subversive. And I think this is a tragic mistake. This is the true American tragedy, and it is affecting our young people. If Christopher Bishop is any example, if those young boys who wore those black coats and took those, you know, those weapons and went through that school in Columbine or any example, if that isn't a message, I don't know what is.
And we're apparently not hearing it. That's obvious, or we tend to forget about it or tend to blame it on whatever it is you don't like about the other side, because it seems to be two sides in this country. And you know, after September...
That's an illusion too, darling.
Yeah, that's...
You can thank Hollywood for that, too.
So after September 11th, the ability to speak out, especially with a dissenting voice, has certainly not been happening. So those who did dissent were shown the shown the error of their way. So that's quelled dissent, and that's been one example of September 11th. Although the Enron scandal is certainly bringing a bit of reality to the whole administration and what they're about.
Even with American dissent, you have to be careful. You have to put a razor's eye to it. There are people who feed off of that who aren't very conscientious and who don't make dissent a valuable pursuit. You know, just to say nay is worthless as well. And American dissent sometimes tends to be specious in that manner. What we need are real dissenters who are going to back up their mouths with some muscle. And American dissenters usually don't do that. Right, right. That's why we're in the stew we're in now.
Yeah. Well, in terms of the literary avant-garde, the language movement, language poetry, do you not see any value in that, or think that that was a bona fide avant-garde?
I think that it was bona fide to an extent, that a number of the people were doing something very honest. You're always going to get a large percentage of people who are just gamesters and who are playing. That's one of the risks of having an avant-garde. I think when you know your craft, you can tell who's real and who isn't. I find when I'm teaching, I have my students look at this work and examine it precisely for those reasons. Because I think if you're going to be an effective writer and you know your craft well and you know the history of writing, you're going to be able to spot the phonies right away and dismiss them for who they are and put your focus on those who genuinely have something to contribute. That's our good old educational process at work.
Which is certainly not geared to teaching people about poetry. And if it is, it's dead white men, continues to be. Was when you were growing up and continues to be, by and large.
Well, that's not such a tragedy either. What I find extremely difficult in the past 10 years as things have polarized in the educational system is that you have a number of... Sometimes it gets very sticky when you have people who are ostensibly writing black poetry, and it's not very good as poetry. It just says all the right things. And that gets to be very difficult, because sometimes saying the right things without artistry is not enough. So it's very, I find myself in a lot of sticky situations.
Because you bring this up.
Because I bring the issue up in the classroom situation. Someone invites me in and they say, oh, well, don't you just love the poetry of Sister So-and-so? Or don't you love the writing of Brother So-and-so? And I have to say, no, I don't. I don't love this writing. It isn't because the people are insincere. It is, but it's that they're poor craftspeople. They really haven't done their job. That they're just sort of... that they've found a niche for themselves.
And keep doing that.
And they've assumed a role. Maybe they're spokespeople. Maybe that's where their art is. Or maybe they're literary hustlers. Maybe that is where the artistry lies. But the artistry is not in the poetry. These people, by my criteria, are not poets. And then I presented with them. I said, well, you know, and so it makes me feel very uncomfortable in those kinds of situations where I have to assess someone who may have 13 PhDs and, as far as I'm concerned, can't write their way out of a torn paper bag.
I'm going to have to make a little note of that. Okay. Wanda Coleman is our guest. She's the author of The Outspoken. Wanda Coleman is the author of many books of poetry, including Mercurochrome on Black Sparrow Press. I'm Paul Nelson.